Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 4th of May. Playing Star Wars, it is Star Wars Day, so we are, you know, in the spirit. Good morning to you all, and welcome to the program. Very nice to have you with us. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to do so with a wonderful panel. Let me introduce them to you, and I will do that in just a moment. I first want to invite you to, you know, take part in the program. Share with us what's on your mind within reason. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you. Panel@WAMC.org. Let's go around the room and welcome everybody. And, you know, metaphorically, we'll say around the room. Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you?
I'm on this side of the room, and I'm great.
There you are.
It was raining early, so I had to take a late walk. And then I had to talk to our conference, as you know, Joe, this morning.
You did it,
on my walk.
You walked and talk at the same time.
And I had to remember what the thing was to get into the other thing, you know what I mean?
I actually have no idea what you mean. Oh, the code to get into the call.
I gotcha. I gotcha.
All right. Well, you made it. Good morning. Thank you. Good to have you here. Mike Spain is back. It's been a couple weeks since Mike's been with us. He's been out traveling the globe because he's allowed to.
fully vaccinated, you know.
Fully vaccinated, and you finally get to see the grandkids, right?
That's right. Went to the West Coast and then down to Denver. So we hit some of them, and we'll get more of them in the coming weeks.
Excellent. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist, UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
I'm well. We had a major May Day shindig here at the house in between the rainstorms, and I'm cleaning up mostly by eating leftover brownies and cheesecake.
Now, I just saw the pictures you posted on Facebook, but so there was an actual May Day or a May poll, right?
Oh, my talented sister Kate made a 10-foot-tall maypole out of ribbons and artificial flowers and PCP pipes, and it was awesome. We played the actual English country music and did maypole dancing. Yes, it was great.
There you go.
People want to break out.
Oh, God, yes. J.P. Miller is with us, the Empire Report's very own. Good morning, J.P. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. I'm well, and happy to have Mike Spain back.
Yeah, we are too. It just doesn't seem like a show without Mike. We always love when Mike is here. Two Tuesdays without Mike, that's no good. Well, welcome to you, JP. Very nice to have you on the program as always, and we are very happy you are here. So, there's a lot of different places we could start, but can we talk about, here's what I've been thinking about over the last 12 to 18 hours. And JP, this is your main story, and rightfully so, but the governor yesterday pretty much lifted all restrictions in New York as of, what, May 19th, I believe, if that date is correct, as of May 19th. And And I know there are caveats to that, but it sort of was a declaration of, okay, everybody, COVID's over. So I don't know how to take that. I'm wondering what the panel makes of it, because it seems with variants and with questions about expiration dates of vaccines and herd immunity and the concerns over the number of people who are not getting vaccinated, who are not getting their second shot, that this, I don't know, to me, and please, this is only my opinion, but this seems to me that it could be, not that it will be, or not that it is, but one of those mission accomplished moments where you just say to yourself, oh, all right, are we maybe putting the cart before the horse? Is that unfair? Alan, what do you think?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It is putting the cart before the horse, and in order to understand it, all of us have to understand what it's like to be a politician these days. On the one hand, you want, as Rosemary just acutely, accurately said, it's a matter of everybody wanting to break out. Everybody does want to break out. Nevertheless, governors have a responsibility, either to keep people safe or to get reelected. And so what happens is They are between a rock and a hard place. And so here's Cuomo saying, let's open everything up along with everybody else. They're rushing to open things up. Nevertheless.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
No, go ahead. Well, I was just gonna ask Mike Spain. So I'm assuming you traveled by plane, right?
That's correct.
And the planes were full, from what I hear.
On some of the flights, yeah, they were packed. There wasn't an empty seat.
So, but as you say, you were vaccinated, so everything, you know, you feel fairly comfortable.
Well, we were extremely nervous flying, when you go through the airports and you start to have to stand close together, it does, you know, the heartbeats start beating up a little faster. And on the plane, they were very adamant about saying, cover your face, cover your nose. When you're eating, take a bite, pull your mask down, take a bite, put it back up and chew it. You know, they were really specific about it. And I was happy to do that, and comply. This is not a flip of the switch. I've got my two vaccinations, 2 weeks have gone by, now everything is normal. I mean, it is not that way at all. It's got to be, you know, going from cold to medium to hot. And it just feels like we pushed the hot button yesterday with this announcement. And I'm very uncomfortable. And I'm so worried, like you are, Joe, that, you know, if it backfires, just slowing it down a little bit could be just a little more advised. And I think businesses, Broadway, other places are taking it a little slower than the governors of these three states are kind of urging. And you do got to wonder, too, because Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, who is not a good friend of our governor Cuomo, announced that everything should be reopened by July 1. And this kind of preempts that big time, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole idea, and to your point, Mike, I just want to clarify what you just said, which was this was an announcement not only in New York, but also New Jersey and Connecticut. His counterparts in those states joined him in this announcement. My question, though, is there's still so many question marks that are around this, such as I was just listening to Karen DeWitt's report at the top of the hour. Okay, so we can reopen Broadway, but by the way, we can have full capacity, but you have to stay 6 feet apart. Well, how the hell does that work? I don't get that.
I know. And Yankee Stadium, for example, you can have a third of the stadium full now, but you have to prove you have either a negative test or you have to prove you've been fully vaccinated with the, you know, the Excelsior app, I presume. And still, if everything the CDC has been saying that out in the open air, we really have very little risk if you're fully vaccinated. But still, you can only fill the stadium one third. I mean, there are so many contradictions. My fear is that people won't know who to believe or what, who's on first, what's on second. You know what I mean?
Now, on the Empire report, the word you used, JP, was boom. Now, I can take that two ways. One is that this is like a major story, so boom, or the earth's about to explode.
That's the great thing about the word boom, is it's kind of up to the reader's discretion as to how they want to interpret it. That's why it's such a great word for a headline. I think Governor Cuomo is being pragmatic here. I think that he sees other states around the country like Texas and Florida that are fully reopened. Their economies are, you know, there is a much lower unemployment rate there than in New York. And I think that Governor Cuomo doesn't want New York to get left behind. I saw over the weekend there were 51,838 people at the Kentucky Derby. And I was kind of amazed at that. I was excited to see how many people were there, but I was kind of shocked that it was 51,000 people.
So you were amazed, and I was sickened and appalled.
But and I do think most people, as we reopen, are going to be nervous and hesitant, and everybody's going to take it at their own pace. But you know, if you are vaccinated, you are pretty safe. It's very. I think it would be a big thing for you to die from the virus after being vaccinated. That's what the statistics show. And I think Governor Cuomo looks at it and says, look, the vaccinated people are protected, and people that are unvaccinated, whether you shut down the government or not, those people are going to continue to get infected, you know, and are going to continue to spread the virus, whether the government shut down or not. There is, you know, with how many people that there are vaccinated, there's almost zero risk that the hospitals are going to get overrun. That was always the thing that the governor talked about as to why we were implementing the shutdowns. And I think that for some people, May 19th will be a big day where people will go out and socialize and mingle. And for some people, it will be another day and they'll say, you know, I'm going to stay home and wait and see a couple of months. And I think both of those are okay.
The 19th is 2 weeks from tomorrow. Rosemary Armeo, one of the questions I have also about this is that the governor in his announcement yesterday said that this is the ultimate incentive for people to get the vaccine so that they can go out and join in on the fun. My question is, what will stop them from doing that anyway, whether they get the shot or not?
Nothing. I think we've almost reached the point where the people who want to get vaccinated have been. The rates of people going to get shots is way, way down. There's talk that we can't reach herd immunity because there are so many either resistors or scared people waiting to see if any of the rest of us who got shots die or have horrible blood clots or something. I'm terrified of what's happening because of just what you're saying. I think that this adds to the confusion that we ever had to shut down in the first place. If we can suddenly now turn it off, which is what we're doing, it's what Texas and Florida already did and did not have terrifying consequences as a result. I think it gives credence to the idea that public health measures were not needed in the first place. It supports Trump, in other words. And I also think we're facing a big moral issue about what to do with all the vaccines that are coming out that are not being used by Americans. It's time to start shipping them off to other countries that have desperate need for them.
In the sense, too, that otherwise they go bad and nobody uses them.
Well, now they're talking about letting teenagers use them.
Well, right. Yeah, that was another story that I wanted to get to this morning, too. Yeah, of 12 to 15, or I think, of doing that. Mike, you were going to say, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to add in to that if we announce, Rosemary, that all our excess vaccines, unused vaccines, will be sent off to other parts of the world, you're going to get an immediate reaction from people saying, hey, America first. Shoot, give me a shot. You know, maybe that's the best strategy to get people to get it. If you don't want it, we'll send it to Mexico.
You may be right.
Yeah, and I know, I mean, Alan, I guess, you know, we keep on coming back to this word confusion, but I understand the political winds here, but that could really backfire too, couldn't it? Can it?
Yeah,
won't
it? Certainly can. It certainly can if, in fact, what happens is things turn around. Let's say there's a reinfection spike. Whoever is calling the shots is going to get the blame.
Is it also, and this is just for the panel at large, so whoever wants to answer this, but when you look at what is happening in South America, when you look at what is happening, of course, in India, and seeing that our world rates is, if you look at this virus in terms of global numbers, we're seeing some of the highest numbers that we've ever seen. Now, of course, that is because of those hotspots, but still, it's we far from have it under control in a global sense. Rosemary? Well, or Alan? Whoever?
I was just going to say, put another way, it ain't over yet. That's for sure. You look at some of the Latin American countries, you look at India, you know, this thing can take off. If you were a Boy Scout, and I know you were, Joe,
yep,
and you made a fire and you put the twigs in.
No, I could never make the fire, but yes, thank you for thinking I could.
You put the matches under there and a woof. And that is what happens, what can happen here and is happening in some spots in the world.
Well, the number that I was surprised at is we're only back to the point we were at the beginning of November, the infection rates for
right.
New York. That wasn't so great. We were locked down pretty heavily back in November. It just seems like it's an awful lot awfully quickly, and I'm uncomfortable about it, and I think a lot of people are.
You know, Mike, you make a great point, because I was fascinated by this aspect of the story, that the given the state government's own measurement and how they, you know, the DEFCON level of the disease, of how many people were hospitalized and how many new cases and how many deaths and so forth. Well, if you look at yesterday's numbers, using that old rubric would have us at very high risk.
Well, exactly.
So you have us at very high risk, and yet we're saying, okay, everybody, go about your business.
Well, I think that if you look back at November, we were at a point where it was increasing. You know, we were on the increase, and we were saying, okay, there's going to be Thanksgiving, there's going to be Christmas, the weather's getting colder, people are going to be inside. It was on an increase in November. We now have seen a decrease over the last 3 months due to vaccinations. And other factors, we're on a significant decrease, and I think that the governor sees that that decrease will hopefully continue. And you know, our state, New York State's entire, our government is funded by the business that is done in New York City, and the business that is done in New York City has historically been people getting on trains every day from Fairfield County and Westchester County and New Jersey and getting on the train and going into work and buying sandwiches and going out to restaurants and, conducting their business in offices in New York City. And that hasn't happened now for a full year. And I think that the governor looks at New York City, looks at the increasing crime there, looks at the office space that is available at historic highs, that real estate values are going down. I think the governor, New York City is really what our government is run on. And right now, New York City is really hurting, and he's trying to do everything he can. You know, he made the announcement from Manhattan yesterday. He's going to do everything he can to get Manhattan back on its feet.
All right, we're going to pause there. Great point. We'll continue. We have much more to discuss on this and other subjects. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. What do you make of it all? Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. This morning, we are talking about the coronavirus and the governors of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut talking about the lifting of restrictions as of May 19th, and also the lifting of restrictions, we should note, also in the state of Florida, announced yesterday. I think that is immediate, where ours will take place in at least 2 weeks. So there's that. The other one was a story that Rosemary mentioned that I want to talk about, too. And that is the fact of vaccinating children. The big, one of the things outstanding here was the kids and now adolescents. They say the FDA appears poised to authorize the Pfizer vaccine for adolescents by next week. That would mean that children as young as 12 could receive the coronavirus vaccine, the Pfizer version, that is. The agency is still working on the authorization, and the New York Times first reported that the regulatory action was pending. Families and pediatricians have been eager for a vaccine to become available for children, particularly in advance of the next school year. So, Rosemary, since you raised the point, what do you make of it?
Well, of course, it's important. It's necessary. We want to send kids back to school. I think that's way more important than socializing, as important as I think that is. And I think this is an important first step. It's probably as safe as the whole testing system that we've been relying on for these vaccines, which is not the usual procedure for vaccines. But then COVID is not a usual disease, and we absolutely know what COVID does. So I think this is good. I don't have children. I'm actually really glad I don't have children at that age right now, because I wouldn't want to be making decisions. But this is the next step, and we're there, and I'm glad that we have alternatives, and I hope people go out and get shots, but even adults aren't getting them, so it's a little bit scary about what will happen with that.
Alan?
Yeah, I think Rosemary makes a good point. We have no real knowledge of where we're going, and that's a problem. This thing can change on a dime. I'm concerned that the political motives of the actors, the governors, have subsumed what's right for protecting everybody.
JP.
Yeah, I read that and I was surprised that they're doing that this quickly. You know, I think it is a tough decision for parents. I think it's good that if you're eager to have your child or your child is eager to get the vaccine, I think it's great that they will have access to it. I wonder how much pressure there will be for children through, you know, do you need it to go to school and all that stuff that might make the decision harder for them. I also feel, you know, I agree with Rosemary that, you know, we don't yet have the adults vaccinated, and I think we could do a better job of giving adults access to the vaccine. You know, I take it for granted that I can easily go on the internet, sign up for an appointment, and go up to the Queensbury Mall to get my vaccine. But for a lot of people, that's not so easy, and I'm surprised that we don't have vaccines available, say, at every Walmart around the state or in the area, or every Stewart's shop or every grocery store. You know, why aren't there people on street corners trying to get people to take the vaccine rather than this process where you have to go to, you know, a Queensbury Mall, which I feel like I was maybe the first person in how long to ever enter the Queensbury Mall to get my vaccine.
That's the Aviation Mall, conveniently located off exit 19. Yes.
And yet, JP, you know full well that, you know, there's going to be a huge outcry for 12-year-olds getting this vaccine because, let's face it, they can pass it on. But we also read everywhere, and you're the maven of the press, that people are saying that there's too much vaccine right now. We're getting a lot of different information from people. We're still reading letters to the paper about people who are frustrated at not being able to get a shot.
I agree with you. I think that they should be at every Walmart, along with a $50 coupon for whatever you want to buy at Walmart. You want a 30-pack of beer, get a flu shot, whatever you want to buy.
Attaboy.
I think we could get hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of more people vaccinated by having them freely available, where you have to actively turn it down when you go to Walmart, when you go to the grocery store, when you go to the pharmacy, and those type of places.
Incentivize.
Can I add one more thing?
Yes, of course.
There's been some writing, this isn't original, but it's really interesting, original to me, that if you look at the polio vaccine, it was actually kids who made it cool to get a shot. Now, admittedly, polio was a disease that tragically struck young people. COVID is not. They're just spreaders. But they used to have sock hops, where the admission for the dance was you get a shot. And there was huge success rates with getting vaccination. And that spread to adults. So parents got them along with the kids. So there's some thought that involving children in this process will actually promote and push vaccinations in whole families, which would be a very good thing. And I also think it's sort of outdated that there's not access anymore. The vaccines are really everywhere and easy to get. But there's a lag in information. And when it first started just a few months ago, it was ridiculous to try to find a vaccine. And many people still think it's that way. So maybe JP, that's right. That's one of the reasons they're resistant. But we have lots of people who should be vaccinated who are not getting it. And I find that still scary. We may have missed the point where we can reach herd immunity because variants have been allowed to spread.
The idea of just what you were saying, you know, I have a 15-year-old niece. She's the only one in our immediate family, that hasn't been vaccinated yet because it's not available. So in that way, it's good. But the kids seem to be all for it. Now, I'm interested in what the parents will make of it, and especially when if it is quote unquote required for entrance into school in the fall.
I mean, we do require measles vaccinations,
right,
and other vaccinations before kids can go to school.
Sure.
But now, you know, again, it's all about everything rolling out so fast and trying to figure this out. What's really right? Who's being political? Who's being scientific? I think this is based on science. I trust that it is based on science. And if kids 12 and older are able to get it, that's going to really make it a lot easier in schools to resume full activity, school sports, you know, school dances, school events. You know, everybody, it's true. Don't you agree that everybody who wants a vaccination is able to get it now? They may need a ride, they may need a little help, but anybody who really wants it should be able to get it. And now that's just spreading to the next group. And you know, I think it's a good thing. I think it's gonna go a long way towards making everything more stable.
I mean, opening up the vaccination sites without an appointment where you can just walk in was a huge change here in New York, where you could
absolutely
just go. I mean,
yeah.
You didn't have to make an appointment for
yeah,
Potsdam
definitely.
Or nothing
oh,
against Potsdam or Utica, but
no,
you know.
No, but they're a long way away.
They are
but
a long way
away.
But
they gave away vaccinations at the Schenectady Green Market on Sunday, you know, so people just going to the farmer's market on Sunday morning wanted to also get, you know, a shot, if they could.
There was and I don't remember where it was, but I saw news footage over the weekend where they went to a vaccination clinic at some sort of market, and one of the people said, I just hope they're here in 3 weeks to give me my second dose. And then so they went to them and said, well, do you plan on being here in 3 weeks? And they said, oh, we don't know yet. And then that gets into the whole thing about people who haven't gotten their second shots, which is
right.
Really interesting, too.
And I'm...
Go ahead, Alan.
I've got a question. I know it's probably misplaced, but I'm going to try it anyway. Why should you cut it off at 12? In other words,
that's a great point. Yeah.
Well, they're still testing 12. I mean, they're testing. They're already doing testing from 6 months old up through age 12, and they think that by early 2022, when you take your infant to the annual checkup, or 6 month checkup, they'll be able to get a vaccination like they get other vaccinations now.
You mentioned vaccines earlier or inoculations for entering school, Mike. And my understanding, I've been reading up on it because a listener had asked this question, posed this question, and I tried to look up and find an answer. And the best I could come up with of why it wasn't. For the military as well as for schools, it wasn't mandated was because this is an emergency vaccine.
Right. And I have not seen when they expect to make these current vaccines that are out there formally approved. Now they're just approved for emergency use. And a lot of people say that's one of the reasons they're hesitant about getting the shot, despite the overwhelming evidence about their effectiveness and the absolutely minuscule amount of problems that people have had with them. But nonetheless, that's the status of them, emergency status.
We do have many, many letters on the subject, so I want to get to them. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will dive into the mailbag. We welcome your letters, your thoughts, your comments. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will be right back. All right, lots of letters, and we'll get to them. Panel, if you have any thoughts or comments you would like to throw into the conversation after I read these, please do so. Vaccines for kids, says Rachel. As a parent of a 12-year-old, unlike anyone on today's panel, I am thrilled that my child can be vaccinated soon. It is not a hard decision at all. I cried when I got my vaccine. I was so happy. I cheered when I became eligible. My kid is also really excited. Kids are currently carrying the burden of the pandemic. They are masking at all their activities if they have them, and few can go into school in person. And even if they do, there are so many restrictions. Being vaccinated gives hope. Among all in favor of the outcry that Alan mentioned, I say absolutely make it mandatory for school, just like MMR. I honestly do not know any parents that do not feel the same way that I do. It is an easy decision to make to have my kids vaccinated. Yay, science. Also, this is not so fast. I went to RPAI over 20 years ago, and friends of mine were working on the tech behind the vaccine way back then. I look forward to my younger kids becoming eligible as well. I hope what she says is true. If you have, and maybe it's unfair to say, if you have adults who are refusing to get the vaccine, and I have talked to many people who say, I'm refusing to get the vaccine. I don't feel that it's tested. I can't believe those people will then allow their children to get vaccinated, but I don't know. It'll be an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, I think that's a great letter.
Yes. Let's see. Bob says, although very unscientific, I work at Lowe's part-time and ask an array of people if they got vaccinated. And not only do I get, I don't trust anything from our government, to it's just the flu. Out of the 10 people or so, only half will or have gotten vaccinated. Any stadium or a large venue, says Gina, that's opening should have vaccines available in the parking lot. Personally, I would make it mandatory. Not a bad idea. David says, my biggest worry is the potential for variant forms of COVID-19 that defy the vaccine spread again in the USA. With the virus raging in places like India and the opening of borders, the possibility of variants seems very real to me. That was a point you were making earlier, Alan.
Yep.
Let's go to Anne. I disagree with JP about vaccine availability. Vaccines are now widely available, especially in New York State. 90% of the American people live within 5 miles of a vaccination site. They have vaccines available in Hannaford and CVS, where it is possible to walk in and get a shot without an appointment. In Albany County, they will come to your house and give you a shot if you're 60 or older. But yes, if you give people $50 gift certificates, it will probably increase the vaccination rate, or maybe a free iPhone. Bribery can work. Just for the record, I don't think that's what JP was talking for. He was talking about a 30-pack.
But good. I would say free iPhone would be cool, too.
Yeah. Incentivize the kids, an iPhone or a 30-pack. Mary says, yesterday afternoon when I was in Clifton Park, Hannaford, I was surprised to hear an announcement over their loudspeaker that said free COVID vaccinations are available at their in-house pharmacy now. The availability may vary from day to day, but it has increased. I spoke with a woman who is not getting the vaccine COVID shot because she claims the vaccine is made using aborted fetus lungs. This is a letter from Linda. She listens to Fox News and is a total Trump supporter. Can this be true? Pray not.
There has been a lot of stories about this, and the Catholic Church clarified that it is not morally objectionable to get the vaccine and benefit from it, even though some of the research starting in the 1980s were done with stem cells taken from aborted fetuses. Now, the fetuses were not aborted in order to support the research. It just happened that someone donated these so that people could use them in medical research. And some people think that taints all of this, but even the Catholic Church has made it clear that that should not keep people from, getting the vaccination. The benefit to you and everyone around you in the whole world is far greater than any moral objection you might have because of something that happened in the original research.
Right. And the way it's being conflated is by some news organizations, let's put it that way, are saying that the vaccine currently is being made using aborted fetuses.
Well, no. And in fact, the stem cells taken from these fetuses back in the 80s were reproduced in the laboratory, and they don't keep getting them from new fetuses. They just get them from the laboratories that are able to reproduce them in, I guess, a Petri dish or something like that. So, people can make their own decision, but it was those cells were there anyway, and they're using them to benefit people.
You know, when I read a letter like that, though, and I'm glad it was brought to our attention, but when I read a letter like that, I just think of Rosemary always saying, we're doomed.
I'm trying not to say that anymore. I'm trying to be hopeful, but it is difficult.
It is really difficult.
I wanted to ask a fast question, and that is, the research that I'm seeing is saying that many more Republicans have problems with the vaccine than Democrats.
Yeah. Like 5 out of 10 or something like that?
Can somebody explain that to me? Either you're going to save your life or you're not, or you're going to put your life at risk. What is that about?
And does that also, and I just want to add on to that, Alan, because it is interesting, and because I think we could easily say, well, that's a Trump thing, but even the former president has said, he got a vaccination, and there's been some talk as to whether he would do a public service announcement, although that has never...
Well, yeah. That's a change, right? I mean,
well, absolutely.
In the, begin- in the beginning, we know where he was. Obviously, they're sitting in a room figuring out how to get him reelected or elected another time. And they're saying, hey, boss, you better change your tune on this. You know, he was such a hypocrite. On the one hand, he was criticizing it. And on the other hand, he was getting it. That is so Trumpian.
Yeah. Rosemary?
No, I don't think I have much to add to what's been said.
All right.
I'll hold my fire.
Okay, hold fire. Anna says,
I think a big part of the Republican hesitancy is the Trump voter. And Trump, while he said he got it, you know, he is one of the world's greatest salesmen. If he wanted to, he could have gotten on TV, rolled up his sleeve, got the shot in the arm like, you know, President Biden did and like Andrew Cuomo did and like, you know, these celebrities do. And he didn't. You know, he did a statement, I got the vaccine. I encourage people to do that. And I think his supporters read between the lines saying, well, he's not enthusiastic about it. If he was enthusiastic about the vaccine, we would know that he was enthusiastic about the vaccine. So I do think it is that. And same thing with the mask. You know, of course, Trump was seen wearing a mask a few times, but he was not an enthusiastic mask wearer. And I think that's a big part of the reason why a lot of Republicans are anti-maskers.
And when he had his chance, he ripped that mask right after he came back from the hospital, right off his face, and he knew what he was doing. He was sending that signal.
Right.
I just have a little trouble blaming this overly on Trump. I mean, people can make their own decisions. And he caught COVID, and people are pretty aware that he survived it because he got medical care unequaled for anyone anywhere in the world. That's not all of us. So I just, what's happening now is something much deeper. It's become deeply political. You don't know who to trust. That's what I hear from the few people I know who are not vaccinated.
But don't you
why take a chance? They're leaving it for everybody else to do. It's like cleaning up the environment. Why should I do anything? There are other people who will take care of it.
But don't you think that's just sowing the seeds of the distrust from the very beginning, from calling it, you know, to saying that we're going to whip this thing in a couple of days to...
it's nothing like
yeah,
that.
It's just you know, the flu. It's just the flu and see, I got over it. I don't know. I mean, I agree with you that there are a lot, and we certainly see that in the worldwide implications of this and the trouble. You can't blame Trump on what's happening across the globe. However, to what, and I believe it was Mike earlier, of talking about the concerns and the way that this was minimized and the difficult time that we had getting the vaccine program underway and from really from Election Day to January 20th, nothing was done as the vaccine rollout was getting ready. I don't know. It seems to me that
this is that age-old question. What came first, the horrible politician or the gullible, ignorant people who supported him?
Well, there's enough room for both, right, Rosemary?
But Rosemary,
chicken, egg,
yeah,
both.
Exactly. What came first? Yeah.
But we did have a president standing up. We all remembered, or should remember, some people don't, I guess, that the president of the United States said it's not coming here. If it comes here, we'll only have a few cases. It's all a hoax, and it wasn't. So, you know, you got to give him a lot of blame.
Well, we have a problem with trust. Clearly, as Rosemary said, and he certainly inflamed that distrust, and now we're paying the price for it. People just don't know who to turn to and who to believe, and even honest people trying to get an answer get different answers to the same questions, and some people think that they're vulnerable, invulnerable. They think that I've never had a bad illness and it won't hurt me much. They don't think about what it might do if they give it to somebody vulnerable, but You know, around the world, Joe, people can't get the vaccine.
Right.
And I don't know how much hesitancy there is in Brazil or on the continent in Europe or elsewhere.
That's a great point.
Or in India. I mean, if the vaccines were as available there as here, I imagine the lines would be a mile long in these places where the hotspots are.
Though you do see what happened in Britain and even Ireland, where, you know, there was a lot of on-off, 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 much like this country, too. A couple quick letters here before we go to a break at the top of the hour. Bill said, what happened to Cuomo's listen to the science and the CDC? Isn't that what he told us? Now you're saying not to listen? Question mark. Parents of my son's friend Billy in Brooklyn has been sick with COVID. This week, Billy's father died. His mom is recovering. I don't understand how New York can be opening when people are sick and dying from this disease still. I think this will be a signal for stupid non-vaccinated people to go out and party, not wear masks or socially distance. My son is about to move from Colorado to New York City for a new job. He is very worried about returning to New York, and this certainly does not help. John says, hey, I was watching the Mets game in St. Louis on TV last night. Yes, there were groups no bigger than four in the stands, all separated by 6 feet, but not a mask in sight. It gave me the heebie-jeebies. And to your point earlier, JP, about the Kentucky Derby, did you see any masks there of those 57,000 people?
I was looking for masks. I'm not saying I didn't see them, but there is also.
By the way, I was looking for masks and my horse, and I found neither of them. But go ahead.
And the horse didn't have a mask.
No.
There also is a case for me to be made for when there are more vaccines than there is demand for the vaccine. You have to say that people that have gotten vaccinated have protected themselves. And if others don't want to do that, that's, in a way, it's on them, right?
No, it's on the people who are going to get the disease as a result of their not doing it. Think about that, right?
All of those people that are going to get it are unvaccinated, right? It's a group of unvaccinated people.
Well, there are kids. There are people over 12 years old. There are a lot of ramifications. And a lot of to go around in terms of blame if somebody doesn't get that vaccine and infect somebody else.
And if what we know now is true and those are the rules, that's fine. But if the rules change mid-game, whether it be variants or that the vaccine that I got in March is suddenly not good in October or November, then you can blame people, can't you?
Yep.
I can. Yes. And when I see politics, everybody criticizes me and says, well, some people do, and say, hey, come on, everything is not political. Everything is political, folks. Every time you make a decision, it's a political decision. And that's what's happening. I'm very worried about what these governors are doing.
All right. We have many more letters. We will continue, and we will move on to other topics as well. We welcome your letters, your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back after this break in news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable on this 4th of May, and we welcome you back. We also welcome you to write to us, panel at WAMC.org. We are talking about the reopening after the governors of New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey announced the lifting of many restrictions, if not most restrictions, regarding coronavirus and COVID-19. I do want to finish up with a few letters before we move on to another topic. Russ writes to us and says, we are fortunate to have an experiment in Florida where the state is canceling all public health provisions with half the population vaccinated. Since a higher percentage of vaccinated individuals will be very slow in coming, we will now have a test example to benchmark infection rates in the wild. That's also an interesting point, too, about what counties and local municipalities will do if they will try to enforce their own restrictions that are separate from that of the state. We'll see that. Steve's.
And let's try to remember who the politicians are who are espousing this stuff. You got a guy, DeSantis in Florida, who is apparently looking carefully at being the Republican presidential candidate and with the support of Trump, who has been saying nice things about him and how he might be the vice presidential candidate with him, to the great upsetness of Mike Pence, who is pretending that he and Trump are still best friends. Shame on him.
Steve writes, what of children for whom there is not yet a vaccine, yet another politician ignoring families during this pandemic? Disturbing, so everyone else is out and unmasked. So should we just keep our children locked in? That's an interesting point, too. Should we be opening up until there's a large swath of kids right now, 15 and under, or under 16, that are not vaccinated? Interesting letter. We'll go to Elaine. In all fairness to Governor Cuomo, he did say not like a light switch from the beginning of the pandemic. He has continued to explain that reopening should happen as turning a faucet slowly or as a dimmer switch. Okay, but yesterday we went from like 2 on the dimmer to like 9, didn't we?
There are so many ways of looking, you know, at what's going on here and why it's going on. I mean, you know, everybody says, okay, everything's not political, Alan, but you do know that this governor is at war with the mayor of New York City, right? And so then the mayor of New York City says, we're going to reopen. And the governor says, no, we're going to reopen sooner than you wanted to. I don't know why this governor is so sensitive about this mayor, because the fact of the matter is this mayor ain't going anywhere. You can write that down and emboss it, and as far as I'm concerned, but he's done. Stick a fork in him, over. So Cuomo ought to give up on that.
So, JP, I'm interested in what you make of what Alan was just talking of the mayoral one-upsmanship between Cuomo and de Blasio.
I think it's certainly a significant factor as to why the decision was made. You saw de Blasio not just made the announcement, but went on national television, went on Morning Joe, made a big show of it that July 1, New York City was going to be open. And I have to imagine, I agree with Alan's analysis. I don't disagree with it.
Tom writes, hypocrite, ? That is the subject line of Tom's message. Biden said that the vaccine was not safe before December 2020. Vice President Harris said in a debate that she would never take the vaccine if under Trump. Many other quote-unquote leaders said the same thing. Now they say it's safe, etc. Mixed messages from the leaders lead to mistrust. Thank you, Tom. Mike Spain.
I'd like to see a fact check on that. I think the discussion was that Trump alone saying the vaccine was safe was not enough for me. I need more information. But I'll yield to the writer if those are the facts. But I don't quite remember it that way. I think there was skepticism, and Trump alone saying the vaccine was safe was not enough for me either. But the CDC saying it and Anthony Fauci saying it means a lot more.
Right. Well, I remember a lot of us on the show saying at the time that we would feel comfortable taking the vaccine when we saw Anthony Fauci take the vaccine.
Well, point really is, Joe, that we know that Trump is a lying liar. We know that. So people who are saying, how can you take the word of this guy about anything? And, you know, let's face it, he was the one who lit the fire under the idea, despite what the letter writer is saying, that there was even going to be a virus in the United States, that it was even going to be dealt with here. I mean, you couldn't believe a word that guy said. So why believe him about a vaccine or anything else?
Great point. Rosemary, your thoughts?
I hate the disputing between, to go back to the original subject that wound us back down to Trump. Why do we always do that? But the fight between de Blasio and Cuomo it's awful. It's destructive. It's one of those things we've talked about where Democrats kind of destroy each other. I don't get it. Even if they don't like each other, can't they play nice in public for the sake of the public, And they don't. So I hate all that. I do think it's led to more confusion. I think overall people are very confused. We get mixed messages. It's not strong enough to say what we're getting. Get vaccinated, don't. Herd immunity, there's no such thing. I'm utterly confused about what to do. I'm just wearing a mask, but I'm doing what I want to do these days, and I'm vaccinated. So I hope everybody else makes good decisions and don't rely on the politicians to tell us what to do.
Yeah, I think Rosemary makes a good point about the silliness of this competition between the mayor and the governor. However, Rosemary, my bet is, and I don't know this firsthand, that de Blasio, who was term limited, was setting himself up for a run for president at the time, early on, and that Cuomo was also doing that. Neither of them got there, but they both were. And I think Cuomo was enraged about that. I think that may be what started it all.
Hmm.
Do you think you can put a fork in Cuomo? What about Cuomo?
I do not. I do not think. I'm not talking about. I'm not defending Cuomo because, as you've been hearing, I have lots of problems with Cuomo. Nevertheless, I do believe objectively that he plans to run for governor again, a fourth term, which is what he said he was going to do.
Right.
I think he has that intention, and if they don't impeach him, which, you know, some of those Democrats in the Assembly and the Senate are talking about, if they don't, I don't see anybody who's coming up against them. Rosemary, you see anybody who can beat him right now?
I absolutely
on the Democrat side or Republican? Yeah.
Well,
on either side.
Either side. I would include Letitia James in that. I don't think anybody
would
can beat him.
So,
well, nobody thought George Pataki could ever beat Mario Cuomo, and we saw
that's
it happen.
That's true.
But Lee Zeldin is no George Pataki.
On the contrary.
No, he's
Lee
not.
Zeldin is a Trumper. He's
right.
A Trumper from Long Island.
Yeah. Right.
What, they're going to be in blue state New York. You're going to, you know, George Pataki was, you know, at very best wishy-washy, and it served him well because a lot of people had been tired of Mario's mouth after a while. So now Pataki comes in, he wins, he doesn't make a lot of noise, and people like it. That simple. Now, in this case, it's a whole different story. Lee Zeldin is a guy from Long Island who's a Trumper. What, he's going to win? That's a riot.
Yeah, it'll be another Carl Palladino type race if he runs.
Oh, and that was fun. Okay.
Yeah.
David writes, those not vaccinated are allowing variants of the virus to mutate, which will allow this disease to haunt us forever. Then we go to Anna. Part of this decision could be based on an underlying goal. If everything is opening and more people are going to the theaters, Broadway clubs and bars, etc., I believe some people who were hesitant about the shot might be more open to it due to the lure of socialization. People who had no need to go out and were skeptical of the shot just wouldn't get it. Now they have a reason to go out, or should I say the option, which was not there before. It may prompt more people to get vaccinated.
Possible.
That'd be good.
It would be good.
That'd be good.
My concern, though, is that people will say, well, look, they're letting everybody go out, so why do I need to get it if we're okay and the restrictions have been
lifted? Well, if you go back to the previous note about herd immunity, of course, the story came out yesterday that they're not really talking about herd immunity anytime soon anymore. It's more adapting to the variants and just having a strategy that's just an ongoing, you know, put out the fire, do this, do that, change, get a booster shot and all that. That herd immunity doesn't seem possible anymore.
And remember, I mean, this
yeah,
is...
Yeah, I mean, we blew it. We just blew it. And nobody's just saying
sure
anything,
yeah.
Of course, directly. We blew it. We let it get way out of hand, spread way too far, globally, if not nationally. And now there's variants. And that means we are stuck with another series of inoculations for years rather than getting herd immunity.
Just,
it's out of the question.
Just a quick plug, but I'm reading, I'm almost through this amazing book that came out today called The Premonition by Michael Lewis, who's known for
terrific writer.
Yeah, for Moneyball and Liars Club and a couple other books. Anyway, Blindside. He's writing about the scientists, both on the East and West Coast, who sort of came together in the early, early days of this pandemic and were sounding the alarm. It is a damning indictment of the CDC and, of course, of the Trump administration. But one of the things is exactly to Rosemary's point. One of the key takeaways of this book is that we didn't listen. We said, you know, don't worry about it. And then by the time we said worry about it, it was too late. And scientists all knew that was exactly what was going to happen, and yet they just allowed it to happen. And it is a really frustrating, almost excruciating read for that reason, because you could just see it play out. And you start putting that timeline into play, and it's really concerning as to, especially, I'll tell you one person who does not come off, the only other person other than Donald Trump who comes off worse in this book, worse than Donald Trump, is Robert Redfield, who does not come off well at all in the new Michael Lewis book. Anyway.
You know, I'm going to get into big trouble here. I'm sorry. But I've been thinking a lot about where this virus originated. And I know it was the Republican position that it came from China, and therefore it's the Chinese virus. That was disgusting. Nevertheless, there is that lab there. And I have always thought that there's a real possibility that this thing was genetically and otherwise developed and came out of that lab. I know that that puts me at odds with some of my fellow people on the moderate to middle left. Nevertheless, I think that hasn't been discounted yet.
It puts you at odds with the World Health Organization, which I would tend to believe rather than any politician in the United States or commentator.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, you know, that it certainly is fair enough for you to say that. Nevertheless, it hasn't been proven and it hasn't been disproven. All it is somebody saying that this is the way, this is what I believe.
Yes, I mean, that's the point, right? I mean, we don't know, right, Rosemary?
With all due respect, we know we have enough information to say it is does not appear to be there does not appear to be any supporting evidence that we should think this way. This sounds a lot like Trump, doesn't it? The big lie.
Yeah.
I believe the election was stolen. Therefore, it's true. It's dangerous to spread that kind of stuff. There's no indication from any scientifically acceptable source that it's true. How?
What were you going to say, Mike?
No, I think what you're saying is a little bit different than denying what is factually provable.
I don't know it.
What you're saying, I mean, I think what you're saying, Alan, at least what I'm hearing, is it has not been proven exactly how this virus originated. Many scientists believe it came from bats or it sort of came from nature. There's a little armadillo-type animal in China that it also could have come over to humans from. And that's a plausible explanation. And because China has been somewhat restrictive about the information and the access that it's given the WHO, it's not 100% certain that it wasn't what you think. But I don't think there's a lot of likelihood it's true, what you're saying. I mean, I suppose there could be people walking among us who are from Mars. You know, it's not likely, but because no one disproves it. You know what I mean?
Sure, I know one of those Martians myself.
Anything goes. Yeah, right. I think it came from animals, by the way, but I don't have any proof.
Well, we know it came from animals. The question is, where'd the animals get it?
Right.
Bats, I don't know. From reptiles to bats. To
most researchers think that it originated in bats, but how it jumped to people is the unknown. And what investigations, including the WHO, are looking into. But those conclusions have not been drawn.
Well, Rosemary makes a very good point. We don't know. So because a major organization says this is our opinion, that's important. No question about it. On the other hand, because we don't know, anything's possible.
All right.
Well,
oh, my goodness.
I agree. That's Trumpy.
This is very Trumpy, and it's dangerous because Trump's point of view is that the Chinese did it, and so we should act in a certain way. We should not. We should be working in unison and jointly across the world to save this, and we're not because of thinking like that, which is unsupported.
Wait. Here we go again. What do you mean thinking like that? All I did was to raise up a concept. I'm not saying
it
happened.
I'm not attacking you.
Well, it sounded that way because you said it's very Trumpian. And there's something I don't really want to subscribe to as being called Trumpian. I just think that it is possible. Look, and I also announced that. I said that I thought that Trump thing about China was outrageous, and it is outrageous. And we know what he was trying to do. Nevertheless, we haven't proven anything either way. That's my point.
Mike.
Well, if you want to talk about information, I mean, we're in an era of disinformation. And I, you know, that's why the Republicans are desperate to try to prove there was voter fraud in Maricopa County, Arizona, so that they can say, well, it's true. Therefore, it'll be a headline somewhere and then people will have doubt. That's the trouble when there's disinformation. It combats reality. It combats facts. And you know, it's confusing. When it gets confusing, people, it's just like this announcement yesterday. We're confused, and it's not helpful.
JP?
I don't know about the lab thing. I did think it was interesting. The CDC director, I think a month ago, said that he thought it might have been come out of the lab. But other than that, you know, he doesn't have any evidence to back that up. And I think, you know, one of the larger questions is, why China wasn't more forthcoming with information about the virus as it was happening in their country, why they didn't shut down their own borders rather than, you know, allow it to spread. And that is something that, you know, historians and scientists and documentarians are going to be looking at this question for decades. And there is, you know, this is something that it'll be like the JFK assassination. There will always be people that believe it started in the lab, and there will always be people that say there's no way it started in the lab.
All right. Let's see.
I'm not sure that it's the same, because there are ways virologists can study this to rule out whether it was genetic creation in a lab. I think eventually we will have that answer. But there's no disputing that you're right about China's behavior when they did realize that this virus was on the loose. Those are two entirely different things, how the virus jumped from wherever it jumped, you know, however that happened. That has not been determined yet, although there's, as we keep saying, no evidence that came from a lab. There are that will be solved. That is something that will in the future come out. But the political implications of what China did later, that is something that bears much more study and condemnation. It's not the Chinese fault that the virus jumped from nature into humans in their country, but certainly how they responded to it afterwards set up a pandemic.
All right. We just have about 2 minutes before we go over. I'm interested, though, in that idea about, you know, from what I've been reading of that investigation, though, Rosemary, I mean, it could take years and years. And I mean, obviously, that's an important investigation, but it's not one that's readily answered.
I heard something from, I believe, Mike just now that I didn't know, which is a lot, I don't know. But you said something about a CDC director who said it may have been in a lab or wasn't in a lab.
I think that was JP. Robert Redfield.
I saw an article. I didn't read the article. I saw a headline that Redfield suggested that. Obviously, if it was proven true, it would be huge news. Because there hasn't been evidence of that, it has not been huge news. And I think, yeah, you know, if that were to ever come out, it would be, of course, it would be significant. But right now, I believe, from what I've read, is that the overwhelming evidence is that it was not derived in the lab. Maybe there is some potential that it did happen. I have no idea. And like, you know, the JFK assassination, I think that there's going to continue to be debate over it. And, you know, documentaries and discussions for decades about this.
Yeah, Rosemary is certainly right about one thing. Sooner or later, we're going to find out.
Right. The quote was made by Robert Redfield for a CNN documentary. We do have to go to a break here real quick. Former director of the CDC and the Trump administration declared that he thought the virus most likely escaped from a laboratory. However, Dr. Anthony Fauci said there are other alternatives, others that most people hold by, and he denounced that opinion of Redfield.
Well, because it was a very blatantly political, stupid, as Rosemary would say, Trumpian thing to do. We know that. That's the problem with even thinking that it's possible it came from a lab.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Last go around with our group this morning, Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We were talking about the origin of the virus prior to our break. We have letters, and they are kind of all over the place, so we'll get to some on all corners of the coin. Does a coin have corners? But you know what I mean, right? Okay.
Depends.
Ellen is right. There are still questions about the Wuhan lab, which haven't been answered fully due to limits on information about the lab and the researcher working on coronaviruses. If it was a lab leak, that's a wake-up call to all such facilities in countries working with dangerous biological substances. We also go to this letter. Nicholas says there is no evidence that the coronavirus was created in a lab, and international team of scientists led by the World Health Organization said in early February 2021, that the coronavirus likely originated in animals before spreading to humans. They investigated for over a month. The investigation dismissed a theory that the disease had been leaked by a laboratory in the Chinese city of Wuhan. Thank you for your point today, Alan. I feel that you're making a point to rule out COVID-19 as biowarfare and not an accident. It's dangerous to rule this option out. Also, how did we get a letter about Algeria? Okay, here we go. Panel said, nothing against Algeria, I just didn't know where the letter came from. Paul says, to say that we do not have absolute certainty about something does not mean that everything is equally possible. That is a logical fallacy, and it is a fallacy relied upon by conspiracy theorists. Virologists know how viruses jump from animals to humans. They do not jump from animals to laboratories. That from Paul. Also, we got this letter from, who is it from? From Pete. Simply debating talking points about COVID-19 takes the air out of the room for discussing issues that are affecting our future and our present that are more important. Vaccinate everybody now and let the medical community do their work. Stop the Republican right wing from altering the democratic process on actionable things like infrastructure, change the economic gap, and move to the end of racially biased injustice. Let's see. We got this from Amy, who says, bring on germ warfare experts from the military. Friend will know them. He's not a Trumpite or I don't know who's friend. Oh, I don't know. He's not a Trumpite nor conspiracy theorist. Spent decades reporting on global economic warfare. And there's no doubt the Chinese would want to scare North Korea. He said the Chinese put a leash on it to leash it to the glove. Chinese depends on foreign countries for their economy. And I think that is about it. I don't think I'm forgetting anything yet anyway. Okay. Let's move on to some other topics here in our few waning moments. We go to, this on the president to raise the refugee cap. I do want to get to this story. He said, the president, after he sort of walked back a statement last month, he said that by mid-May he would make an announcement that the cap would increase. And that is the announcement he made yesterday. Biden says he will raise the refugee cap from 15,000 to 62,500 after widespread criticism for extending Trump-era levels. President Biden on Monday lifted the annual limit on the number of refugees who can be admitted into the United States through September to 62,500, but said admissions would fall short of that mark, capping months of wavering and reversals from his administration and fierce blowback from human rights advocates and fellow Democrats. Biden said in a statement that he was raising the record low cap of 15,000 set by the Trump administration, which did not reflect America's values as a nation that welcomes and supports refugees. Alan.
Well, I did say yesterday morning at 7:40 in the morning that he was going to have to do that, and he did it. I think it was the right thing to do. He raised the number of people who were coming in. It's clear that Trump didn't want anybody in the country that wasn't going to be, you know, voting Republican, and I've said that again and again. Biden was caught between a rock and a hard place. And we know what the decision had to be. It had to be that we will let more in, but we won't let everybody in.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, Biden's dithering about lifting this number of refugees allowed in the country. It recognizes that immigration of any type continues to be a very hot, divisive political issue. Trump exploited that. He used it to scare people. He vowed to ban Muslim refugees from coming to the U.S. From war zones in the Middle East and Africa. And, you know, it's a tough issue. And Biden, I think, was just trying to hold his finger to the wind, and the wind has pushed him to let up a little bit and be more, this is a human rights issue, and it's a justice issue. And I think it should be recognized as that and not just some political issue, but it's impossible not to bring in politics.
Nice use of the word dithering, by the way.
I wondered about that.
Yeah, it's good. I like that. Rosemary.
I wondered where he got that number from. Why isn't it just like 100,000? Of course, it was too low under Trump, and I think it will go still higher in the next fiscal year, which is only October. It's only a few months away. Why isn't it 100,000? It's almost like, how's that determined? Maybe there is a method, and I'm just unaware of it, but it does sound to me like he was just trying to indicate to people that we figured out exactly how many refugees our country can absorb. And I think that's really baloney. I think that there's room for lots more. It's safe to let in lots more. But he can't really say that because we've all gone kind of nuts on the issue of immigrants since Trump.
JP.
If you read the New York Times article, they say that the United States is not going to be able to admit 62,000 refugees this year because we don't have the infrastructure or the manpower to process those refugees. So while the limit is now 62,500, Biden says that is likely not going to happen, that we will likely have less than that admitted this year. I thought it was interesting. Biden is not a shoot from the hip person. When he came out with the 15,000 number that he wasn't going to raise it, he had obviously consulted with his advisors in the White House, and they came out and this was going to be their position. And he made that announcement and within hours was forced to reverse it. I do think that assuming the economy is good, which we all hope the economy stays good for the next couple of years into the midterms, I think the midterm elections, immigration is likely to be the number one issue Republicans are going to try to use to win office. And we can see that Biden is going to pick his lane as to whether he's going to be a moderate on immigration or be a progressive. And it seems like right now he's kind of in the middle of figuring out what lane he's going to be on that issue.
Point of clarification. Yeah, so the limit has to do with a definitely weakened infrastructure after 4 years of Trump rather than the resources of this country to absorb more refugees. Is that correct?
To process them. It's the resources to process them, I think.
That makes sense, I think.
Yeah.
All right. We have... Go ahead, Rosemary.
I mean, that's a political issue, too. What does it take to process a refugee?
Well, they do background
checks. If we make
checks.
It unnecessarily hard and bureaucratic, then but background checks in countries where people are coming from, their police states, they already know about the people. I don't know. I just would like to know more about what's going on. I think that they're using words here to hide what they really want to do.
Final story for this morning. Bill and Melinda Gates are ending their 27-year marriage. They are planning to divorce after an announcement made yesterday from both parties on Twitter. They certainly run one of the largest foundations in the world, and they plan to do so even after their divorce. I don't know how... We couch the story as far as how we talk about it. I will say,
gossip.
Yeah. Well, That's it, sort of. I must say that it's hard. It was. It's one of those stories that it was all we were talking about at the dinner table last night. It's a fascinating story. It's obviously sad whenever a marriage ends. But this one, like, everything is really nice in the statement. It all goes really, you know, very nice about how we're going to work together and so forth, about how they want to lead healthy and productive lives. We continue to share a belief in that mission and will continue our work together at the foundation, but we no longer believe we can grow together as a couple in this next phase of our lives. Conscious uncoupling.
I say good run. They had a good run.
That's
half
right.
Half the country get divorced, isn't that right? So
more
than they had a good, more than half. So they had a good run, and congratulations to them for all they've done and all they're going to do.
That's right. And then the big question, of course, back to the gossip: prenup? Question mark.
Yeah, it's been reported that there was already a contract for separation and dissolution of the marriage, which sounds like a prenup. And I'm sure that somebody will get a hold of that. After Jeff Bezos and his wife had a divorce a few years ago, she got like $36 billion.
Right.
And she's been giving it away furiously to colleges, small colleges and universities and different organizations. And there's some speculation maybe Melinda Gates might be more progressive in how she gives her share of the fortune away, and whether she supports things that empower women, because she has supported those in the past. And Bill might be more conservative, or he might be leaning more towards, you know, fighting disease, which is a very wonderful thing too. And maybe that we'll see a gradual change in the way this money is distributed. But the important thing is they're giving $50 billion away and even pledging to give more away in the future. And that's got to be admired.
Right.
I think that the divorce is an indication that marriage is doomed. They have more money than God, so certainly no money issues. They had meaningful work together. They raised three wonderful, successful children. If they had sex problems, they could have hired the biggest, best therapist in the world. If they didn't get along, they could have each bought their own continent to separate each other, and they could not make it work. What hope is there for any of the rest of us?
Wow. It's very dark.
Ellen, how many years? 51 years this year?
51 years now. And, sometimes when people get divorced, they say the same thing. Why can't they suffer the way the rest of us do? No, I was just kidding.
I was just kidding.
But the fact is, I do love my wife. And so to write it all off is I think somewhat premature, but I get it.
I was married for 34 before I got a divorce, and Al Gore is similar.
Well,
I just think there's a real indication here that lifelong just together two people is not really, it's not the norm.
Well,
you're probably right. You're probably right. It's not the norm, but in some of our cases, we are very, very lucky. And I got to tell you, I'm very lucky. It's that simple.
Kelly and I talked because we were married the same year as Bill and Melinda Gates, and we said we have no plans to pursue separate lives, right? And
oh, thank God.
Decoupling?
Yeah.
No decoupling?
No decoupling. at least, I don't know. We said we were in for the long haul, so we'll see what happens. Alan, thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Great fun.
Rosemary, JP, and Mike, thanks as always. Up next is the Congressional Corner with Antonio Delgado. We'll be right back.